Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me pleasure to welcome you back to the 10K Collective podcast, the place to be for six, seven and eight figure Amazon sellers, particularly if you're based in the UK or Europe. We have a great deal of guests that are going to help anyone in the world, though. So delighted to welcome a UK-based guest today. So Neil Curran, who's the Managing Director of Regional Express. So Neil, warm welcome to the show.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for having me.
No problem. And so tell us, what do you do at Regional Express, first of all?
So Regional Express are a freight forwarding and logistics company specializing in the e-commerce sector. Our core business is helping international-based sellers, predominantly in the US, sort of Chinese marketplaces, expand into European marketplaces. And we offer any sort of number of services there, from VAT, registration and tax filing services, door-to-door logistics, and some general warehouse and fulfillment options as well for them.
And so US sellers expanding to Europe, which is obviously a huge thing. There's lots of US sellers considering coming to Europe, but struggling with it. So today we're going to focus on potential pitfalls and issues for international shipping for e-commerce. So obviously, there's lots of fun and exciting things that can happen with logistics, right? So it's always reassuring to have an expert deal with those for us. I understand you guys do freight forwarding as one of the main things you do, so door-to-door logistics. So presumably, even though you've got US-based sellers trying to expand to Europe, I'd imagine that the manufacturing mostly happens in other countries than America, right?
Exactly, yes. Although the core of our client base is US-based companies, we find that obviously a lot of those companies actually have their product manufactured in China or India. So we offer, obviously, services to accommodate that from Southeast Asia, from China, to ensure we have a sort of global presence for our customer base, and giving them the most cost-effective and quickest option to get their product over to the European marketplace, really, rather than having to go China to US and then US to UK.
Oh, yeah, that presumably sounds like it's going to wipe out any profit margin. There was one client I work with who's done very well. She's quit her day job. So it's always been the textbook thing that everyone wants to achieve. But very bright lady. But she did at one point want to have some product manufactured in Australia, fly it to the UK, and then send it on to the USA, until I pointed out that she would probably be amazing not to make a loss while flying products that far around the globe. So yeah, don't do it at home, just in case anyone's newbie kind of, you know, new to the space listening. I mean, I guess anyone who's been doing this for more than 10 minutes will be slapping their head. It just goes to show how otherwise bright people can come up with some odd ideas when it comes to logistics. And I've been no exception myself. So first of all, let's talk the typical supply chains that I guess we're talking about is stuff coming out of China, going to the USA, and then stuff coming from China, going to UK and Europe, which is like your specialist bag. So what would you say, first of all, are the sort of typical, from the big picture perspective, the big pitfalls that people can fall into with logistics? And then we'll start digging into some of the details.
Yeah, one of the obviously the biggest pitfalls sellers and customers that we work with generally fall into is the cost perspective, really, not knowing what their costs are for a new marketplace. Obviously, it's important when you're looking to start to sell your product overseas, especially in Europe. It's a big marketplace, and you need to ensure you know what your sort of, firstly, your tax responsibilities are regarding VAT and duty, and then obviously your shipping and freight forwarding costs as well, because if you don't know what they're going to be, they can quickly eat away at your profit if you haven't factored them into your sale price on whatever marketplace it is that it's being sold on.
So, I mean, in a sense, those sound like very obvious things. I mean, I did ask a very general question, but I suppose that implies that you come across US-based sellers who don't factor those into their price. I mean, is that really the case?
Absolutely, yes. Especially when you're talking about sort of import taxes and also sales VAT here in the UK. It's important that the seller understands those sort of pitfalls, what the import taxes actually are on the cost of your product when you're importing it into the UK, and also what sales tax you have to add onto it when you're obviously putting it up for sale on an online marketplace. That's one of the reasons why we actually sort of created a sort of tax department here at Regional Express, really just to hold overseas companies' hands, just to ensure they understand the rules and regulations in this, so they don't come unstuck when they're selling their product, because obviously they're expanding to a new marketplace to ultimately make money, and they need to do that as best and efficiently as possible. Which is why they need to understand or get the assistance of a company that can certainly offer that advice and that.
So let's talk to the American listeners then, who are, you know, often a majority of the listeners of the podcast, because it's such a huge English-speaking constituency, I guess, as well. But let's talk about VAT first, because I don't know why it is. I mean, I'm not claiming that VAT is easy, particularly for me to understand either as a European, but it somehow seems to blow the brains of most otherwise highly intelligent American entrepreneurs I speak to. What's your experience of Americans dealing with VAT, and how can they best get their heads around it?
Yeah, it is a bit of a difficult subject when working with overseas sellers, mainly because, and quite rightly, they're based overseas, so they don't necessarily know the ins and outs and the requirements of tax compliance in other countries, like I'm sure many UK companies don't know the regulations within the US.
Nobody knows the regulations in the US with sales tax. Everyone's up debating it. So yeah, that's 100% true, yeah.
So, and because overseas companies don't really understand it and see it as a bit of an unknown quantity, it scares them, and they maybe as that regard don't want to learn it, or that possibly puts them off with their expansion to the European marketplace. But I can assure everyone listening that it really isn't as difficult and as scary as it seems. I know there's a lot of literature online that can sort of contradict and confuse at times, but if you speak to someone like ourselves or a specialist tax agent, they can really make the process clear for you. And it really is just about understanding sort of what values you have to declare for your products coming into Europe for the actual import customs entry, which then obviously determine the amount of import tax and duty that you pay on that particular shipment. And then obviously when you're selling your item to effectively the end user, you need to ensure you're putting enough sort of sales VAT or sales tax on your product to accommodate what you need to pay in your tax return to the UK government. I mean, tax returns here in the UK are only filed every 3 months. It does vary throughout Europe, other countries, Germany, France, etc. You have to file monthly. But again, that's why there's companies like Regional Express out there that can sort of take care of all that for everyone and really ease the pain of expansion, if you like.
Yeah, no, it certainly can be. And I take your point, first of all, just reflect on what you're saying, the unknown quantity, I guess quite rightly, if you can't quantify a risk or a cost, then you can't do your projected profit and loss and cash flow, above all cash flow, because that's what makes or kills businesses, right? And yeah, and then you suddenly, it is an unknown quantity, and I suppose it makes sense to stay out of a market until you can get a handle on that. So let's try and dig a bit deeper into VAT. And I know you're not necessarily a tax specialist as such, but you can put it in context of the supply chain as overall, which I think is valuable. What are the sort of simplest things you can say about VAT that you find that American-based companies or business owners don't know about that is useful to them? Give us sort of top three or four facts about VAT. And you can stick to UK if you like, or VAT generally, whatever's useful.
Yeah, so if we stick to sort of UK marketplace for now, generally speaking, it's the same across the board. But if we start with the UK, that sort of makes it a little bit clearer. It's important to know that when you're, point one is when you're importing your product into the UK, you have to pay import VAT at the time of arrival. That's generally paid on your behalf by the freight forwarding or the clearance company that is working on your behalf. And it's important to know that the amount for the product that has to be declared to customs on import is effectively the manufactured amount. So whatever your, if you're shipping directly from China, whatever the price of the goods is that you're purchasing them for from the manufacturer over there. If you're importing from the US and you've already sent those goods from China to the US, there are a couple of additional sort of factors you have to add into the landed cost of the goods, predominantly those being any sort of charges to get it from China to the US initially. But that could be sort of discussed in more detail on a sort of case-by-case basis. One of the big factors as well that a lot of people miss is actually import duty. So while import VAT in the UK is at a standard rate of 20%, import duty is effectively product specific. So depending on what the type of product you're looking at importing, that will determine the duty rate that we pay customs. So it's important that you know your sort of HTS codes and that they're declared correctly to your freight forwarder. And on any paperwork that's submitted for import, especially as duty rates can vary from zero all the way up to sort of 20% or so. So there's quite a variance there. So it's important you get the right HTS code, so you pay the right amount of duty, because obviously you don't want to be overpaying on import duty, but you also don't want to be underpaying as well. It is also worth noting that depending on the type of product you're importing, there are some differing VAT amounts. So for example, if you're importing sort of baby or children's clothing, that's actually VAT zero rated. So there's no VAT on that type of product. That also applies for some sort of food products and so on. But again, that can be determined on a case-by-case basis with the use of the HTS code for your particular product.
Okay, that's interesting. So I didn't know that you could actually end up with some zero rated stuff. Well, I guess I'd heard of it and then forgotten it again. So what are the sort of common categories that the joyous news is true for, that is VAT is zero rated? So children's clothing, what else are we looking at?
Yeah, children's clothing is a big one. That's quite big for the companies that currently work with us. And also a lot of food products can also fall under that category. But it really does depend on the type of product. So it's always worth looking at the HTS code. And there are government platforms out there that you can quite simply type the HTS code into and sort of determine if it's zero rated or full VAT.
So what would the process be? You get the HTS code first, which tells you about the import duty side. But the HTS code itself doesn't tell you about the VAT zero rated or not zero rated.
It does. It does. It does. So if we've got the HTS code from the overseas seller or our customer, we can also guide, if people are unsure, we can also guide them on finding the correct HTS code as well and sort of assist them with that. But generally, yeah, once we've got a HTS code, we quite simply just find that in the customs tariff here in the UK. That will tell us the duty rate. And it will also tell us any sort of VAT sort of requirements as well, whether there's any option for exemption or not.
Let's dig into some detail and let's try and it's numbers on podcasts are always fun, not, but we'll try and keep it as simple as possible. Let's say I've got this coffee cup in my hand here. So let's say I'm importing this coffee cup from China. Let's say I'm paying, what I sell this for, I don't know, £8. So let's say I'm paying manufacturing cost £1 and then I'm freighting it in for, I don't know what, 50 cents a unit. That's, I don't know. Let's think in dollars to start. This is the horrible thing when you're importing from China and paying dollars to your supplier and then going into the UK, you're just going to get going to come to terms with the fact you're converting between dollars and pounds all the time, right? But let's say, let's say I paid a dollar to whatever, 75 pence. Ah, oh, this is getting messy already. 75 pence for my cup and 25 pence freight. So I've got a nice landed cost of a pound.
Yeah.
So what are my import duty costs and what are my VAT costs on that particular item? I mean, don't care whether it's exactly precise, you know, import duty, but give me, make it up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, so it's effectively calculated in two stages. The first calculation is the import duty. You will basically take your landed cost. So that would include the value of the goods, obviously what you've purchased them for, the value of any freight, and the value of any sort of insurance.
So hang on, can you run those fast again? Because I think these are the details that we need to try and get. Yeah. So say those again.
So you have the obviously the value of the goods, the effectively the manufactured price, the shipping cost to the rival UK airport or port, and then any sort of insurance premium or figure that is attached to that shipment.
Okay. Insurance, all right.
And then what happens from there is that obviously you total that value up and that gets you your dutiable value. So you would then times that total by whatever your duty rate may be. For example, a lot of plastic articles are 6.5% duty. A lot of clothing articles are 12% duty. So that sort of gives you a bit of a broad idea of what the duty rates are for some sort of goods. And then basically, once you've got that duty calculation, you then take those three other charges that I've just previously mentioned, as well as the duty amount, as well as a VAT adjustment factor, which is effectively your landed charges here in the UK. And then you total five of those revenue streams up.
How do I get calculate VAT? So just feeding back so people are clear on this. I've got the value of the goods, so I paid 75 pence, and I'm going to stick to pounds. For America's listening, once you import, you're going to get a VAT invoice in pounds anyway, so you're going to have to get your head around that. So let's just stick to pounds, even though you're going to translate it from dollars, right? So we're going to make our peace with that idea. Value of the goods for manufacturing, 75 pence. Shipping costs, say 25 pence per unit, this is. Let's say I didn't bother to insure it because it's only a few fairly cheap mugs. So I've got a landed cost of a pound, then that's my dutiable value, right? And then let's say it's 6% duty, so I'm going to add 6% of a pound, which is 6 pence. So I've got a pound and 6 pence so far. How do I calculate the VAT? Is that multiply all of that lot together for the VAT?
Yeah. So you've got your £1.06 at the moment, which is your charges plus your duty.
So you've got the landed costs, which is the value of the goods, shipping costs and the insurance, plus the duty is the sort of VAT-able value. Is that right? Or whatever the word is.
There is, for the VAT, you also have to include the landed charges here in the UK.
Plus landing charges. So if you're using, how does that work?
So that's generally based on the size or weight of the shipment. And there's sort of predefined volumes there.
Oh, wow.
If you're breaking it down for a unit example, for argument's sake, and to keep it nice and simple, let's just say that's 5p a unit. Say it factors down to that.
So it's a bit like when you're importing to US, which I guess a lot of people, well, US people will be more familiar with, but I've also, like a lot of British-based sellers, importing to the US, that basically, if it's above $2,500 value, then you get a customs bond, or in fact, that number's probably changed recently, but you know whatever that number is. And below that, then you have certain ways of calculating duty. So the actual import process costs as distinct from the import duty. So it sounds like it's quite a similar thing. But in Britain, it's based on the size of the consignment, not the value of the consignment. Is that right? Or is it?
Correct. Yes. Yeah, the landed charge.
Okay. That's very important because I think that's different, isn't it, from the US way of doing it. Is that right, in your experience?
My US experience is a little limited. I know they have a sort of threshold here, depending on the value of goods, whether it's a simplified or full entry.
I'm not shifted whole containers there personally, but so I don't have a great understanding myself, but I do know that basically, you know, from experience, that it's value based. So that's quite important to know about that if you're calculating that. So yeah, it's what sort of typical, if I let's put a bit more of something to the picture. Let's say that I've looked at the unit cost so far, but let's say I've got a consignment of I don't know whether you'd measure it in sort of pallets or, you know, if you're looking at mugs, I'm maybe starting to regret this example. I'm shipping a lot of air with my mugs. But let's say I've got 25 cartons or something like that.
Let's to sort of keep it simple. Let's, for argument's sake, say we've got an air freight shipment arriving here in the UK and it's 400 kilos in weight. The VAT adjustment factor that we would need to include on the customs entry would effectively be 40 pence a kilo.
Okay, 40p a kilo, and that's the VAT investment, VAT adjustment factor.
Wow. So that's £160 effectively that you'd be adding on to the import entry.
Okay. So 40p a kilo. So let's say that they, I don't know what this weighs, 200 grams. So let's say, and again, Americans, you're going to have to get your head around the fact that we use the metric here. Even though normal people don't, they use pounds and ounces like you do, but officially we're metric country. So you're going to have to get used to that. There's a lot of Google. Just Google it. I trust you. It works. Okay. So yeah, 400 kilograms. So let's say that's going to be like 1600. No, it's going to be 2000 units, which is actually not that many. So, okay, cool. So I'm importing 2,000 mugs. So I'm going to have that. So how is this looking so far? So the VATable value, I've got a pound landed cost, the 6p import duty. This is like that game when I was a kid, don't forget the bacon. It's like, you know, a list that gets ever longer. So you've got the landed cost of a pound. You've got the import duty of 6p. Then what is the VAT going to be per unit? This is your... scenario.
So you'd effectively multiply that by 20%, and that would get you your UK VAT.
Okay. So what's this 40p a kilo VAT adjustment factor then? How does that come into it all?
So that effectively goes on as a total on the entry. So let's, for example, say you've got 1,000 mugs.
Yeah. I think I was saying 2,000 mugs, but anyway, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, so you've okay. got it. Yeah. Okay. 2,000 mugs at 75 pence each. So that's £1,500. And then you've got your £500 worth of shipping costs, which will take you up to 2,000, which is obviously a pound a unit. You've got your 6p per unit duty, which will take you up to £2,060. So you've got those charges there all accommodated for £2,060 showing on the customs entry. You'd have a total of £160 or so on top of that. And for your VAT adjustment factor. So that would take you up to a taxable or VATable total of £2,220. And then you'd quite simply just multiply that by 20%. And that would get you a VAT, import VAT amount of £444. And then if you wanted to obviously divide that to get your unit price, you'd divide that by 2,000. And you're effectively paying 23p. per unit VAT.
Right. You know what? It's VAT is even nastier than I thought, because I personally hadn't, I don't know what I've been doing for the last years, probably this, but I mean the VAT adjustment factor, I guess I hadn't really accounted for that. Most that would explain why the VAT bills vary a bit more than I was expecting.
That's where a lot of sort of, especially overseas importers fall down. They think they quite simply just pay duty and import VAT on the cost of the goods, whereas obviously, unfortunately, it's not that simple, and you end up paying obviously on your freight charges, insurance fees, and obviously
which is really the significant landed
costs
yeah.
as well. Especially if you're shipping something as large as 4 container loads, that can certainly add a significant portion to your import bill. If you don't sort of understand it,
absolutely. And the thing is, then it's not so much with the unit economics necessarily, although if you're shipping something as they're going to sell for such a low cost as this generic looking mug here, folks, available near you, I quite like it actually, but it's not going to really, it's an M&S mug there. Yes, it's got a certain degree of quality, but it's very, very mainstream. So maybe I can sell it for £5, but yeah, then those pence is 20p here, 30p here starts to add up, because that might be your profit margin. But even if it isn't, I guess the cash flow problem of having a bill for, say, £25,000 when expecting it to be £19,000, you know, is going to be a substantial problem, isn't it? And actually, if I'm shipping something heavy, I mean, it's not untypical for the freight costs, if it's air freight, to be much bigger than the manufacturing costs, right? I mean, if I'm air freighting these suckers across, then I might be paying a pound a unit or something, I'd imagine. So I could easily double or more my VAT bill, actually, couldn't I?
Yeah. And it it's quite important as well that to realize that import VAT, although you pay it, obviously it's a cost at the time of import, it is effectively just a cash outlay because you do factor in your the import VAT you've paid when you're completing your tax returns here in the UK. So that money does effectively get refunded or offset against your sales tax. So that's quite important to know as an overseas seller. So it's not effectively sort of dead money to you that you'll never see again.
So it's a cash flow issue rather than the profit and loss issue then?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
For example, if you import a shipment and you pay £500 import VAT, and then you sell that item on an online platform and you collect in £1,000 worth of sales VAT, you won't then have to pay the UK government the £1,000 sales VAT you've collected. You'd offset one against the other and only pay the difference, basically.
So I guess per unit, again, this is probably a simplistic way of doing it. Let's say I'll sell this for £5. The VAT on the selling side, effectively sales tax at that point in things, it, as opposed to kind of like an import tax, effectively. At this point then, when I'm selling it, I sell it for £5, I have to put an extra 20% on once I'm VAT registered, right? And then I sell it for £6. £5 comes to me, £1 goes to the UK government. So I've already paid 22 pence per unit in terms of import side VAT. I don't even what the right way of putting it is, but VAT already when I imported. So in effect, I'm going to give the government £1 minus 22, which is 78 pence. Is that right overall?
Yeah, that's effectively correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's also processed within the same sort of filing period. Then yes, that's the case.
Yeah. We are going to get a VAT specialist to come on, so we'll dig into some of this stuff a bit more. So we probably can leave that one there. But I think I can completely understand now why. I mean, I live here and I guess I'm used to VAT, you know, to some degree, but there are some nuances that had escaped me, even though I thought I had a handle on it. I clearly don't as much as I thought, and I could see why the Americans would be scared off. So, again, it's like one of those things, don't do this at home, kids. I mean, I just, whenever I'm speaking to new sellers, they start talking about how to import stuff themselves. I'm like, stop, use a freight forwarder. This is not stuff for amateurs to play with, you know, and entrepreneurs, you know, especially if you've got some success behind you and you're basically being a solopreneur or got a titchy team, you get a very, very bad habit of what Chris Ducker calls superhero syndrome, which is you think you can learn anything. And like, yeah, maybe you can, but you probably don't want a legal case against the UK government as a result of your learning. So it's probably not an area to dabble in as an amateur, right? So I say this, and whether you work with Neil or whoever you work with, I'm just pleading with you right now not to do this stuff on your own because it's too complicated, and equally not to run screaming the other direction. Just hire a specialist and let them do their work, okay? So there's my sales pitch done for you. But I'm saying that just because I've seen too much ugliness. I mean, there was one new client I work with, just as an example of what not to do, who did his own kind of importing via boat from China or some stuff, and then it ended up in Folkestone, I think, or somewhere on the south coast, and then they had to pay to get it shipped to get it transferred to a warehouse or something, and then they had to pay to get somebody else to ship it into Amazon. It just became a colossally expensive, messy, drawn out nightmare. And I said to them, okay, first of all, you've got a coach. That's me. You're paying me. You could have run this past me. I mean, do what you like, but like, why employ me and then not employ me, if you see what I mean? And then the second thing is, dude, just use a freight forwarder. They would take care of all that for you. I mean, cock-ups happen, but, you know, but at least it's in the hands of a specialist. It's less likely. So, yeah.
That's right. That's one of the main sort of pitfalls that new shippers or new importers have when they're imports from China, that they have a sort of manufacturer do it directly. And I think, like one of your sort of colleagues or customers you mentioned there, they send it to arrival sort of Felixstowe port only, and then they get hit with a lot of UK charges that are prohibitively expensive and effectively unknown at the time of shipping,
and that can
have a negative impact on their sort of balance.
Oh God, yeah, this would completely wipe to any form of profitability whatsoever in this product. It was like a $10 product or something, or £10 product, and they had about a £1 profit margin in it, if they did it well. And which is is acceptable. It's not a good margin. It's not really a safe one. But I mean, there was, it went like negative 20-30% because it was a total disaster. So yeah, I mean, and again, somebody else in slightly bigger scale from one of the masterminds exported a load of goods to America from the UK, which had probably originally been done in China. So it's kind of like the opposite way around to what we've been talking about. But they got a container rejected in the US and it got shipped back to them. So £20,000 later, they've learned not to do it themselves as well. Even though this is a company that's been in business for decades. I mean, so they're not dumb people and they're not inexperienced, but they were inexperienced at shipping entire containers out to US in order for them to get imported into Amazon. So look, anyone can make mistakes. But again, the danger is to assume you know what you're doing with this stuff when actually there's all sorts of nuances that can really bite you in the proverbial.
And we always encourage customers to just also look at comparisons, because I know when shipping from China, there's a lot of deals out there that say free ocean freight, that sort of thing. And that's not always the cheapest deal, because if you're getting free ocean freight from the origin, they're going to be making those fees up somewhere else. And that's typically a destination. And therefore, you then get stung with very expensive charges at destination. And rather than using a freight forwarding company sort of from door to door, you will be able to offer a sort of consistent price and service throughout.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this comes down to a very important point. So I'm just making some notes here for the show notes. As ever, folks, you can get the show notes at 10kcollective.com. I write fairly detailed show notes compared to the vast majority of podcasts. I mean, probably to my detriment, actually, but I think it helps people who actually read it. So please go read it, especially with something as complex as this. I was just going to say, having an unpredictability as huge as not just financial, but in terms of supply chain delays, which can really mess you up. If you go out of stock on Amazon these days, you may not regain that position if it's a competitive advantage marketplace. Not quite as brutal in the UK as it is in the USA, but it's not a great idea. But you're introducing massive variability into something you should be trying to turn into a predictable machine. And for me, that means you've got the mentality that you're trying to save, you know, a few pennies here, and you're risking pounds worth of volatility per unit. Yeah. That says to me that you really got your prices upside down anyway. Obviously, per unit costs are critical, but the predictability of those is really hypercritical. And we've been looking, there's been some very interesting work by Ashley Pierce, who I also interviewed for the group, for the podcast, I should say. You find that as well at 10kcollective.com. It's the first interviews. And he's a member of the Masterminds as well. And he's been working very, very hard to get consistency in his supply chain, to go the opposite. So he knows what his costs will be. He knows what he knows roughly what his sales volume will be, because he knows his sales volume. He talks to the supplier, because the supplier knows the expected volume. They can then talk to their suppliers of raw material. So he's smoothing his entire path of the supply chain, minimizing cash flow bumps, minimizing interruptions to stock and sales, right? So this is complete opposite mentality to somebody who's going to save a few bucks by ocean shipping from China and then discover, as I have in my air freight once to the USA, that it took four different people involved in the conversation to get these goods through customs once. And that was a customs agent, a customs broker. And I discovered there's a difference between those two in the USA, and a freight forwarder. And then I think I even had somebody else. I can't remember who the hell the fourth person was, but it was just a nightmare on sticks. It wasn't actually my origin, the idea to change freight. It was my supplier. So the other thing to say is that from my little horror story there, that it wasn't that big a financial problem, but it was a pain. That don't let your supplier randomly change your freight forwarding arrangements either. Because is that something else you've experienced with your clients? Because I found that they randomly changed it, and it changed everything about the import process to the US in that case.
Yeah. A lot of Chinese manufacturers like to work with their own freight forwarder. So they will obviously try and push that. But obviously it also greatly depends on your sort of terms of purchase as well with that manufacturer, whether it's Ex Works, FOB, or sort of CFR. It sort of obviously greatly depends on that as well, as to sort of what service you can utilize from China effectively.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for Kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million US dollars or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.